Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't fallen foul of any distortions in the space-time continuum. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Phew! It's rather hot outside, but it's lovely and cool inside the captain's cabin of this rather splendid sailing ship. Latimer has opened all the shutters so we can see the mainland we're anchored off, and brought in all the wooden chairs he could find. So take a seat. I have a fondness for ships, and thought this one looked magnificent as we rowed across the bay to it, with its striped sails and crow's nest. There's a wonderfully kitsch skull and crossbones flag flying, and more barrels of rum than you can shake a teacup at here. One can only assume the owners are getting ready for a pirate-themed party this evening. I imagine that's why the crew are on the mainland, no doubt buying in provisions such as cheese, pineapple and cocktail sticks, and paper umbrellas for rum cocktails. They really have gone to town. There's even a plank jutting over the edge, and the smell of unseemly things coming from below decks.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, a Mr. Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Ah, oh, marvellous. Let's see his calling card. Adrian Tchaikovsky, Esquire, speculative entomologist.
I'm not sure about the motif, ma'am. It looks like a warning sign.
A stylized wasp in a circle. They're not my favourite insect, it has to be said. And I'm surprised. Adrian's such a gentle chap.
It's the gentle ones you have to watch, ma'am. I've seen him on Just a Minute. And there's his profession to consider too, ma'am.
Not all lawyers are evil, Latimer.
A friend of mine said that about necromancers once. I haven't seen him for a long time.
Oh, don't be silly, Latimer. Send him in. Oh, Latimer, just one more thing. This ship is just decorated for a pirate party, isn't it? There aren't any real pirates here, are there?
No, ma'am. Scurvy Pete himself gave me his personal reassurance that there will be no pirates aboard this ship.
Oh, that's a relief. They really have got the pirate theme down to a T.
Yes, ma'am. I'll fetch our guest.
For those of you who don't know, Adrian Tchaikovsky is the author of The Shadows of the Apt epic fantasy series published by Tor Books. The 9th book of the series is out, with the 10th on its way in 2014. He's also a keen role player too.
Mr. Tchaikovsky, ma'am.
Hello, Adrian. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Would you care for some tea?
Ooh, yes, please.
Wonderful. I'll pour. How do you take it?
White, no sugar. Do we have rum? If we're on a pirate ship, do we have rum?
Well, I think there was a bottle of rum over there that I saw. Do you think? I'm sure it'd be fine. They're not going to miss a little bit of rum. Would you like me to put a little splash of it into your tea?
Let's make this tea Caribbean.
Excellent. And we do have some Jamaican ginger cake to go with it. Would you like a slice?
Oh, splendid choice. Yes, please.
Wonderful. Latimer made it this morning with just the right amount of spice. So there we go. Now you have everything you need to be comfortable. I was wondering if you could show me the curio that I asked you to bring along today.
Ah, well, in honour of our surroundings, I have brought you a map.
Ooh, I love maps. What kind of map?
Well, as you can see, it's drawn on lined paper from an exercise book in blue pen. That's rather smudged now. It shows a landmass with a southern and western coast. And there are some blobby areas in the middle with mushrooms drawn on that are probably supposed to be trees. And a few mountains and a scattering of cities with names scribbled in terrible handwriting. This is a map from long ago. 20 years ago, to be precise. This is the map I used for a role-playing game I ran back at university.
Aww.
It is also recognisable as the map that's drawn rather more neatly in my books, because the game I drew this map from eventually became the Shadows of the Apt series.
Ah, oh, that's splendid. So it's not only a map, but a piece of history.
Yes.
That's wonderful. So, are you going to have it framed?
I think the time for framing is probably a bit apart. It's rather tatty and creased and going at the corners of.
But all the best maps are. I mean, I've never seen a pristine treasure map in my life.
That's true, true. This one's been stuffed in a folder with about 100 character sheets for something like 2 decades.
So did you finish the game? Or did you not finish the game but finished it in the books?
I ran a couple of campaigns which took us the plot roughly towards about 2/3 of the way through the first book. And set up various other things that I never got a chance to do. We had a gaming group at university where we all took turns, and so we played all sorts of bizarre games, and that was my kind of celebrity spot, or non-celebrity spot at the time.
So the books went much, much, much further than the game then, seeing as there are 10 of them.
Yes, well, nine at the moment, but the 10th one is on its way.
Yes, when does that come out?
That, I think, as I'm being currently told by my publisher, is February, but as you will know as well as I, that doesn't necessarily mean it will be out in February. That's just what they're telling me.
It's sometimes a little bit like London transport time, isn't it? Wow. So by the time you were writing book 10, you had 9 books of world in your head. And these are not slender books, are they, Adrian?
No, they're proper epic fantasies. You could stun a bear with most of my books quite easily.
You could. I like books that double as offensive weapons. But how on earth did you handle that? How the hell do you do that? How do you write a tense book in a series and not have to break your brain in the process? Or did it?
Mostly it's just because I do a lot of planning. I seem to do more planning than most authors I know, so I plan everything out chapter by chapter, and I plan some of the chapters out sort of section by section, and that all worked until we hit the 7th book in the series, where it hit some sort of critical mass, and everything I needed to tie up and everything I needed to foreshadow and everything that that book was actually about just got horribly tangled. And I've never done quite so much rewriting and re-editing as with that particular book, and after that the last 3 have been fairly plain sailing.
So do you have to keep spreadsheets of information to... I'm just thinking about, I don't know, silly little things like the descriptions of characters, like the colours of their eyes and...
Yeah, you know what, keeping spreadsheets of that sort of thing would have been a really good idea, rather than, for example, frantically leafing through book after book trying to work out when I mentioned what a particular character's hair colour was.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I don't know if I could have been as comfortable in your company at conventions if you had been the kind of person who could keep that kind of spreadsheet, because it's the thing that I've always wanted to do. But it's boring, isn't it? We're just too busy being lost in our own world.
Being creative, lovely, creative.
Yes, creative, darling, creative. So I understand that you're missing a sword fighting class to be here on this very fine ship with us today.
Yes, yes, it's a great sacrifice, and if we are then engaged by pirates with swords, I'll be at a severe disadvantage.
Pirates? There aren't going to be any pirates here, are there, Latimer? Oh, no, he's shaking his head. I'm sure we'll be fine. So what kind of sword fighting is it?
It's German medieval broadsword fighting. It's von Lichtenauer is the sort of sword master and manual that we follow, and the techniques are called the Meisterhau, which translates to the secret strokes.
Oh, wow, that sounds great in both languages. And few things do, actually. That sounds great.
It's really intellectual. This is the bizarre thing. I mean, because it's someone who's designed a system of fighting where you don't get killed, it's terribly, terribly careful and defensive, and every stroke is designed to basically put your sword on the opponent whilst also keeping their sword from you. It's a very complex cerebral system. A lot of these European martial arts are. One of the things that people don't realise is we have a very, very rich European tradition in martial arts. But because it happened quite a lot longer ago than, for example, a lot of the Oriental martial arts were developed, they've mostly been forgotten. But it's not just walloping about with a great big weight and length of metal. It's a science, really.
That sounds really fascinating, actually.
Sorry, I do tend to go off on one occasionally.
No. I like it when people go off on one about something they're passionate about. Does that not define us as geeks?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
That's interesting, because whenever I've thought about broadswords, because of the weight of them and the size of them, I would imagine it gets pretty damn tiring pretty quickly in a fight. Is that true, or do you get used to it?
All right, the weird thing is, single-handed swords are really tiring to use. broadswords, which you use with two hands, are much, much easier. And it's simply because you've got twice the support, but the sword doesn't weigh twice as much.
Oh, okay.
When you have just a single sword, or even worse, a sword and a buckle or something like that, your arms get very heavily weighted down very quickly.
I did a little bit of kendo at university. And that was great because obviously it's a bamboo sword, so even though I don't have the best upper body strength, I could, you know, wallop away for ages without getting too tired. I do love swords. I've always been fond of sword fighting. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is not too long ago, I took tea with a Mr. Abercrombie. Now, we won't mention what he did to a certain thing in the forest. We don't talk about that, do we, Latimer? But he was a charming fellow before he became Lord Grimdark. And one of the things that he said that interested me was that he no longer reads within his genre. Mm. And I was wondering if you do.
I really do. I read constantly within my genre. I get through about a book a week. I'm always on the lookout for new ones and new recommendations. With me, if I stop reading fantasy, it actually has an effect on my writing. I stop writing and I lose a certain amount of inspiration. I think I need a constant through flow in my brain.
Whoa. So who do you rate as a fantasy author?
I've been cautioned not to mention a certain China in your presence, but I think...
Oh, now, stop it at once. I'm not that far gone. I can actually converse about his work. It's his arms I can't converse about. But his work, yes. Okay, so that's good.
And I'm a huge fan of Gene Wolfe. He's one of my favourite authors. I think his work, his writing is quite unique. I think there's no one else who can quite create worlds and settings and deep levels and layers of text like he can.
I'm keen on Twitter, as you know. I'm glad you came and joined us at last over on the Twitters.
Mm.
And
it took a lot of persuading, I know.
Yes, I know. I asked on the Twitters whether anyone had a question for you. And one of my favourite chaps who I've met there and who was at Worldcon, a Mr. Wiswell, asked, what's the hardest you've ever laughed whilst reading fantasy?
There was a short story. This is going back to when I was about 12 or 13. It was in Peter Davidson's Book of Alien Monsters.
Ooh.
It was called Verfing the Gwerks. I've not seen it anywhere else.
Verfing the what?
Gwerks. The precise pronunciation is actually a point in the story. It's to do with... It was kind of ahead of its time, really. It was set in a very sort of ratty, shoddy arcade with kind of like neon letters at the front, none of which were quite on at the same time. And there was a game in the arcade that the two boys were playing, which was essentially a sort of an alien device which enabled them to fight the creator's wars for them. And it was hilarious because most of the jokes were to do with the way that the instructions for the game were rendered. And then eventually they break the game and everything goes wrong in the arcade, and the lights on the front of the arcades spell out a rude word that can be seen 5 miles out to sea. And when you're 12 or 13, that's absolutely hilarious.
Yes, there are many things that are funny at 12 and 13, which we later discover are not. And quite frightening as well, how the quality of cartoons that we enjoy at that age seems to degrade over time.
Oh, blimey. Well, I mean, I've got a 5-year-old son, and good Lord, there's some rubbish being peddled to children these days.
Oh, there really is. Mine is 6, and it's terrible, absolutely terrible, which is why we're so keen on The Legend of Aang and The Legend of Korra.
Oh, yes.
Such good storytelling and great role models and a narrative, you know, such a luxury in so many things that are peddled at children these days. But anyway, I wouldn't want to sound grumpy. I do like to try and be positive about these things. But yes, Legend of Korra and The Legend of Aang is great for kiddiewinkles. Now, you just said a little while ago, and I'm sure it wasn't the rum that makes me think this, but I am sure you said that you read a book a week.
Yes.
And you write these huge, gigantinormous novels, and you're a lawyer. Do you actually sleep, man?
Yes. I tend to get about like one decent lie-in a week, and that keeps me going.
Good grief. So I was wondering, are there good transferable skills between being a lawyer and an author?
Not as much as you'd think, to be honest. I mean, I'd like to say, oh yes, I can draft sort of very elegant pleadings for the court, but the styles are so different, it doesn't tend to come across. What I find is that while I'm doing the lawyering, I get build up a sort of a head of steam on the part of my brain that does the writing.
Oh, okay.
And so, I mean, I sometimes write in my lunch hours, or it seems to get me ready to write when I actually have the time.
So it's like it builds up a pressure cooker.
Mm.
Builds up to be released in focused places.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if someone asked me this sort of, how do you write so much, what's your secret, and I told them 9-to-5 job, but they probably wouldn't believe me. But I remember teaching a workshop one time when there was a lady who'd been a teacher, and when she was a teacher, we know how little time teachers have, she had written and written and written, and then as soon as she'd retired, she stopped writing because she had too much time and too little structure to it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's true, I think. I think it can be a problem. I guess it depends on the kind of person you are. So do you stand up in court and do all of that kind of stuff? Are you that flavour of lawyer?
I do it a bit on little stuff. I mean, if anything big, we get barristers. But unfortunately, I am not the sort of valiant criminal, heroic criminal defence sort of lawyer. I mostly do debt collection and housing repossession, so it's a fairly unmeritorious branch of law, I suppose. But yes, I do that sort of thing, and I stand up and I explain why people should pay large sums of money to other people.
You see, I ask because there is just such a, I don't know, a mythos around courts that's been kind of created by television.
Mm.
And, you know, the endless examples we see again and again and again, that I'm often quite fascinated to speak to people who actually work in the real legal profession to compare it. But, you know, like everyone thinks of writers being kind of drunk and miserable all the time, and whilst in many cases that's true, it's not universal.
Some of us just get by being miserable, you know.
Yes, some of us don't need the booze. Whereas I like the booze, but I'm quite cheery with it. So, you know, no one fits into the universal stereotype. Being a role player, I have a question for you,
okay,
which is about the rather fine beard that you sport. Now, if we were to impose a system upon it and you could choose a bonus for your beard, what would it be out of the following three options? Now, you may need your lawyer brain for this as well as your role-playing beard. So the first option is a beard of dark desire, which is +1 to appearance and +2 to seduction. Or would you like a beard of steel, which gives you +5 to armour? Or a beard of holding, which enables you to carry 3 extra items with no encumbrance penalties. Which would you have?
Well, I think the beard of dark desire, given that I am wearing the beard on express instructions from my wife, who said she will divorce me if I ever lose it, I do not think she'd be overly impressed with bonuses to seduction.
Okay.
And a skilled enough swordsman. Should not need an armoured beard, so I'm going to go for the practical choice and go for a beard of holding.
Ah, the beard of holding. To carry all of those papers that you must carry around, and maps and dice. Very useful. Actually, it makes me think a bit about Mr. Twit from the Twits. Have you read that?
Oh, yes, and he's got little bits of leftover food in his beard.
I know, it's given me a horror of beards, I must admit. Not yours, of course. Yours is lovely and well-kept.
It's a very clean beard.
And a very clean beard, yes, but no, I couldn't let my husband have one. No, it scarred me, that book, it scarred me. So, I understand, and I have seen the cover, which is very, very pretty, that you have a short story collection that's just come out from Newcon Press.
That's right, yes. It's my first ever collection of short stories, about half of which are new to that book.
Fabulous. And it's called Feast and Famine.
Feast and Famine, yes.
It does look very, very splendid. And Newcon Press do print some fabulous stuff.
Yeah, I've had quite a few in various of their anthologies. They're fun people to work with, and this is my first sort of non Shadows of the Apt book, really, this collection. So it's nice to get something out of there which is quite varied, just a bit of science fiction, a bit of horror, a bit of comedy, that sort of thing.
I'm really looking forward to reading it. Are you going to be at World Fantasy Con?
Yes, I'm booked in for that.
Yay!
I think I have a I may have a panel. I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing. I'm doing something there, I think.
Being in the bar?
Mostly that.
Yes. So I'm assuming that Feast and Famine will be on sale there.
Hopefully the... Yes, I'm sure Ian from Newcon will bring along some books for their stand.
Excellent, because I'd like you to deface a copy for me, if you would be so kind.
Absolutely.
Well, let me just check the teapot. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty. And, I can hear something. There's some kind of disturbance outside. I'm just going to have a look out of the window. Ah, there seems to be some rather angry-looking pirates on their way into the ship.
You did promise me no pirates, otherwise I would have brought the sword.
Ah, well, you see, I was promised no pirates myself. I'm so sorry. How embarrassing. You invite someone who is a friend and who you respect professionally to afternoon tea, only to have it disrupted by pirates. I'm so sorry. Perhaps Latimer could furnish us with a solution?
I'll talk to Scurvy Pete, Mum. I'm sure I can straighten this out. No pirates on the ship.
Sorry there, we had a little misunderstanding. What can I say? Bad luck, eh?
I'm afraid Scurvy Pete wasn't very helpful, Mum. However, I do have some pirate disguises, costumes with me, Mum, for the party.
Latimer? This ship hasn't been decorated for a pirate party, has it?
No, Mum.
This is a real pirate ship, and those are real pirates, aren't they?
Yes, Mum.
Oh, this is so embarrassing. We'll talk about this later. Let's put these disguises on and hope that we can pass off as pirates and escape on the rowing boat on which we arrived. I'm terribly sorry for the inconvenience, Adrian. Perhaps I could wrap up a little bit of the Jamaican ginger cake and take that with you as an apology.
Should I put the false beard on over my real beard, or...?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think leave the false beard off. I'll wear two. I think I need two. And, yes, that's it. Oh, it's a bit scratchy as well. You'll be more comfortable with your own. And, right... Let me just adjust that knotted handkerchief on Latimer's head.
It's a deliberately jaunty angle, Mum. It's the fashion this year.
Right, sir, I think we're fine. Everybody ready?
Ready, Mum.
Are you ready, Adrian?
All right, ready.
Okay, have you got a good pirate voice?
Arr!
Oh, goodness! Well, you've convinced me. Okay, let's be brave.
Who be you? Shiver me timbers. I'm Lucky Latimer, one of the scurvy chaps you brought aboard at the last port. Right you be?
Oh, it's a bit like Cornish.
And who you be?
I'm Emma Two Cups, my handsome.
I like the sound of that.
Of tea! I mean rum. Rum, my handsome. Two cups of rum.
And what about you?
Arr!
Nice. Hang on. There's something funny about your beard. Ah! This beard be real! You're not proper pirates. Get 'em!
Run!
Take that, you scurvy dogs.
He shot Polly!
She was the
Get in the boat!
Pirate a pirate could hope for.
Why did you shoot the parrot and not the captain, Latimer?
I never liked parrots, Mum.
Where's Adrian?
He's stayed behind to cover our escape.
But he doesn't have a sword or a false beard. He's done for.
Yes, Mum. Oh, I believe he's working some dark magic, Mum.
Look at the sea. What's that coming out of it? Not Lauren's Kraken, that's all we need.
No, it's... Well, I've never seen that before.
Are those crabs?
All manner of crustaceans, Mum. He must know their secret language. I must remember that.
There are thousands of them. A wall of them. No, a wave of them. They're crushing the pirates.
I can't swim.
Latimer, wait for Adrian.
No need, Mum. The crabs are carrying the pirates into the sea. Mr. Tchaikovsky has his own ship now, according to pirate law. All's well that ends well.
Latimer, I haven't forgiven you for this. As Latimer rows us back across the bay, I'd like to thank you for joining the deeply lovely Adrian Tchaikovsky and I today. Dear listeners, I'm afraid I'm going through a period of upheaval in the real world at the moment, and between you and I, it's beginning to wear me down. I've been so stressed I'm having trouble sleeping, and I was wondering if you could be so kind as to recommend things that I could do to help me relax. I've never been very good at it, you see. Is there something that you do to help you through stressful times? Do be dears, and pop over to www.tnjeopardy.com and let me know in the comments over there. Well, until next time, my sweet ones. Now, Latimer, put us to shore over there, please.
I am terribly sorry about the pirates, ma'am. I certainly never intended for you to be under any threat.
If you want me to forgive you, find a particularly spectacular location for the next tea there.
Very good, ma'am.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.tnjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.